our series, The Road to Jerusalem, where we are journeying with Jesus as he left his region of Galilee where his ministry centered, and he's got a call, or he's invited by God to go what we ultimately know as Easter in Jerusalem. We'll be arrested, he'll be put on trial, and he'll face execution on a cross and ultimate resurrection. And so we're journeying with him as he journeys to learn more about Jesus and to learn what we might take from that as followers of Jesus. And if you're not yet a follower of Jesus, learn that this is who we choose to follow and who has saved us. And so we gather together around what his stories tell us. Today, the road to Jerusalem had tears on it. Tears. I don't guess anybody likes to face disappointment. I mean, anybody choosing, oh, I want the rough road, right? Like, not a good thing. I mean, there's times when you think, hey, it's going to go good, and it doesn't go so good. Maybe you've lined up to take a job interview, and you're like, man, this is going to go good, and the first interview goes good, and you get called back for a second one, and that's the day your car won't start, right? Or you've gotten advice on, here's what you do in an interview, and you're like, nope, I'm going to just do it my own way, and you answer that one question that way, and it just, oh, it doesn't turn out so good. We have regrets. We miss out. Tears. I had a story like that a little bit in my senior year of college. Some of y'all know I was blessed beyond measure to get to go to Auburn University. We won our basketball game, so give me a minute to celebrate a little bit, right? But no, my senior year, the spring semester, I started looking for a job. I was going to graduate. I studied. My first degree was in engineering, and I was looking for that first job out of college and began to interview, and some of my friends began to interview, and what job might await us as we begin our lives as professionals. One of my classmates interviewed with a company and had tremendous success, and it was a ways away, and he came back and was like, this is a great place, and I actually got an offer, and he told me how much it was, and I said, you know what, I'm going to apply for that same place, right, because that's a pretty good offer. And I actually got an interview and went to that interview, and it was going pretty good. And you get coached for things like, you take this class for what your job's going to be like, and you get some education. They say, do this, don't do this, polish up your resume. But you can never answer every question in practice for an interview, right? And they asked the question I wasn't sure how to answer. They asked, well, how much do you expect to make when you come here? And I was like, hey, they're starting a negotiation. And so I said a higher value than what I knew my friend had made or gotten an offer for. Evidently, that's not the way to go about negotiating, right? Like, they went, and went quiet, and I didn't get the interview, and it was, or didn't get the job offer. And I was like, golly, I wish I'd known better. I wish I'd had some better advice. I'd listened to people that said, don't talk money until they, but I didn't. I had another interview, and it was at a different company. I think I had to fly to Indiana, and I was doing the work it took to get there, and storms were coming, and flights were grounded, and I was going to miss the interview. And this was before cell phones, and I did the work it took to get on calling cards. Do y'all remember that? You had to like punch in like 39 digits to be able to dial the thing. And I found a payphone in the airport to be able to do that. And somehow I got connected. I don't know if I called the human resources manager at home, but rescheduled to where it'd be in the afternoon instead of the morning. Worked out good and went so good, but I missed that opportunity because I didn't answer the questions right. I didn't listen to the advice people had given me, and I was flying home from that trip, and a guy sat on the airplane next to me, and he was an experienced professional, and he said, how's it going? And I told him the story. I had applied for this job and got a great interview, and I told him about the money, and he's like, you know? And then I told him, I was like, I worked hard to reschedule the interview, and I didn't get the offer, and he goes, let me give you one advice if you want it. And I was like, at that point, I was kind of ready to listen, right? I'd done it my way, and I was like, I'm going to listen a little bit. And he said, if you want the job, tell them. I was like, what? If you want the job, tell them. If it's going good in an interview and you want the job, tell them you want the job. I was like, okay. He said, so many companies, when it's going good and they make an offer, if they're not sure if the person wants the job, they'll have to negotiate and they'll fall apart and they'll go to three or four people. But if they know a person really wants it and they will most likely take it, they're more likely to give an offer. And sure enough, At that point, I was ready to listen to some advice. And I took that advice. On the next interview, it went pretty good. And I said, you know, I'd love a chance to consider an offer to work here. And I got an offer. And I did that at a couple of more places, and it worked. Where I knew everything I needed to know technically. I knew what I needed to do. I didn't heed the advice that I'd been given until it got kind of crunch time. And yes, I'm competitive. And yes, I got a slightly higher salary than my friend did eventually. It only took me like 30 interviews to get there. And so anyway, but we had fun that way. So much of our life is persistence, right? Is doing the next right thing that's before us and staying the course. And when we face the tough circumstances, to keep going, to learn from that, to hear God's influence into our life, to hear from others' influence in our lives so that we know the right thing to do, that we receive encouragement, and we take that and we do it. We face discouraging events, sometimes roadblocks get in our way. The grief of those things that happen to us get us down. Like, I thought I had it. This is not going like I'd hope. There are sometimes people are actively working against us, detractors that are coming into our path that are working against us. And sometimes it's even our own hard-headedness that gets us into trouble. And I think sometimes our spiritual journey can be that way as well. We face hurdles to doing the right thing. Maybe we've got a job and we face a boss that's trying to get us to do something we ought not do. And it's a battle to stay the course and to do the right thing. We face struggles as parents in our lives to raise our kids right. On the one hand, we may have an over-competitive culture that says win at all costs, no matter who gets hurt. And on the other hand, we may have a culture of apathy through too many video games or too many online experiences or too much chemical temptation that breeds a culture of apathy. And so we're stuck doing the right thing with our kids. So how do we persist? How do we do the next right thing when those roadblocks and attacks come? And even when it hurts us. So we're going to look at a passage where Jesus faced some of those attacks, some of those detractors from what God had called him to do. If you've got a Bible, I invite you to look at Luke. It's in the New Testament. It's one of the Gospels. What we call the Gospels are those stories that tell of Jesus' life and death and resurrection. And Matthew, Mark, Luke, it'll be about 85% of the way into a printed Bible. And we'll be looking at chapter 13, where Jesus is continuing his journey towards Jerusalem, and he encounters a warning from a pretty major detractor and even some frustration about that detractor and what he was facing in his ministry. So look at these words. Luke 13, we'll begin reading in verse 31. I'm reading the New Living Translation. If you got your app open, the words should also be on the screen. Luke 13:31. At that time, some Pharisees said to him, that's Jesus, get away from here if you want to live. Herod Antipas wants to kill you. Jesus replied, go tell that fox that I will keep on casting out demons and healing people today and tomorrow. And the third day I will accomplish my purpose. Yes, today, tomorrow, and the next day I must proceed on my way. For it wouldn't do for a prophet of God to be killed except in Jerusalem. Verse 34, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones God's messengers, how often I have wanted to gather your children together as a hen protects her chicks beneath her wings, but you wouldn't let me. And now, look, your house is abandoned, and you will never see me again until you say blessings on the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Jesus sets up this scene, and he kind of phrases it in a metaphor of a fox and a hen. Y'all know that the fox in the hen house, that's not a good thing, right? If you got a fox, we may look at it as humans, see a fox and see this kind of majestic being. Oh, they're so pretty whenever they run in the field. But if you're a chicken and you've got chicks to protect, a fox is not a good thing, right? And Jesus draws the correlation between a fox and the hen house to the ruler, the king Herod, being the fox, and the hens, the chickens, being the people of God. And he says, tell that fox. You see, King Herod had already, and we know in other gospel, in the Gospel of John, that he had arrested Jesus' cousin, John the Baptist, the one who baptized Jesus, and ultimately had him beheaded. And so people are saying, look, you're going to face some confrontation from this king, because Jesus was going out casting out demons. He was healing people. And if you were there, you may read it and think, oh, that's just what Jesus did. But if you were there and you saw that happen, it's pretty easy to see where a king that had just his own human power thinking, this guy may be a threat to me. I can't do what he can do. And so Jesus faced a real threat in Herod. The ultimate purpose of Jesus would be fulfilled through his death, but it would not be at the purposes or the mindset of Herod. See, later on, that Jesus continues to show his compassion, even when he's faced with that threat. He says, I'm going to keep healing people. I'm going to continue to cast out demons right up until that purpose in my death is fulfilled. The compassion Jesus has, like a mother hen for her chickens, little baby chickens that the fox is coming to destroy. Jesus says, I want to protect you, but the people wouldn't accept that protection. The people wouldn't accept that protection from God. They said, you know what? Either we've got it, God, or we've got it, Jesus. You know, like, I'm a baby chicken. I'm going to run out and fight the fox, right? And that's what our lives are like sometimes. We're like, God, I got this. I'm not sure I need you. And Jesus says, you're a baby chicken. You're a baby chicken. It's okay to be a baby chicken, but no, you're a baby chicken, and you need the protection of God. God wanted to establish his church. He wanted to establish his people, and he wanted to do it through Jesus. But even those people that knew him often rejected him. They rejected the leadership of Jesus. They rejected the protection of Jesus, and leaving the house in this passage is the temple, the religion, the Jewish religion, instead choosing to focus on the comfort of a reliance on that king, or maybe the comfort of rules instead of relationship with God. This week, my family got to go visit Lily and Lily Graham and St. Jude's in Memphis. You guys may know the story of Lily. Her and her family are part of our church. And in September last year, she got diagnosed with AML leukemia. And in that course of that, we know St. Jude's. You may know St. Jude's, but they went the next day after she got diagnosed and began treatment, and she's in, after I think at least 3 rounds of chemo, she was in remission and got a bone marrow transplant. She now, I think today is day 60 past that, and it's going better. She's not all well, but she's getting better. We got to spend a little time with her, and she's riding a 3-wheel bicycle and getting to tell only the jokes that Lily can think of. And spending time with her family and guests. We're honored to spend time, and I'm honored to have been humbled by Lily in the sock game on yesterday that we played, and I don't think I won a round of that. So she's doing good, but she's still getting treatment. But I remember sitting with her and her family when they got the diagnosis, leukemia, and I don't know if you've been through something like that with a family. And I just went through it as a support, as a pastor to the family. But it's devastating because you don't know what's coming next. And you don't know what to do. And you think, if I don't do something, it's not going to, it doesn't just get better on its own. And so a place like St. Jude's, is exactly what you need. Because people have prepared, people have given, people have done what it takes to prepare a place that they know the treatment to take. If you're that family, whenever you get that diagnosis, you're like, I'll do it. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll get in the car. And I know her mom and her family got her together and went 5 a.m. the next morning to Memphis to begin treatment. Because there was a place that had the protection and the cure. In many ways, St. Jude's is a great illustration of the spiritual work that Jesus wants to do in our lives. The diagnosis we've received is death and separation from God because of the sin in our lives. And we get that call when we recognize that. And Jesus says, I got a place for you. I've got a protection for you. I've got a journey for you that not only will help you to survive, but will help you thrive, to live out the purpose for which God has created you. Jesus says, I have what it takes not only for you to survive, but for you to thrive. Jesus said, it takes just giving up and doing it my way. From what I've learned in cancer treatment, it doesn't feel better to receive the treatment. It feels worse. Right? Some of the pain and the suffering you go through is worse. And sometimes our spiritual journeys don't feel better, but God takes us through those times and makes us better when we trust, when we follow his leadership. Jesus says, I'm going to gather you up like a hen protecting her chicks from the fox that seeks to raid and destroy your life. So we're going to look at a few ways that we might take this passage and apply it to our lives, those journeys that are uncertain, where we need to listen a little bit to God, where there may be some tears in our road. Number one, we face evil, we confront evil. When we face evil, we confront evil. Luke 13:33 says, yes, today, tomorrow, and the next day, I must proceed on my way, for it wouldn't do for a prophet of God to be killed except in Jerusalem. Jesus didn't allow the threat of King Herod to keep him from doing the work that God had given him to do. The work of healing, the work of casting out demons, the work of going to Jerusalem for the purpose for which God had called Jesus. And if I'm honest with you, I hurt whenever if I have done it and other churches have done it, have said, hey, following Jesus is going to be an easy road. Or somehow it's going to be a better way of life than what you might do on your own, because it most likely may not be. If you read the whole of the New Testament, those people that followed Jesus in the book of Acts, many of them faced continued persecution, continued resistance from the government, resistance from their families, even to arrest, even to imprisonment, even to death as a martyr. It's God's understanding, it's my understanding of God, that he doesn't promise to keep us from that, but to journey with us through those times. And it's for that reason God says, I'm leaving you here. If our only purpose was to be saved and to be with God, God would take us straight to heaven. But God says, I've got a purpose for you and a need for you to journey, to be there for your family, to be there for the people around you, for the work I've created for you to do. And sometimes it means confronting evil. And by evil, I mean those things that happen in our life, the natural disasters that hurt us, the storms that knock out our home, the disease that comes into our lives. But it can be also those that stand against us, like that King Herod that said, I'm going to go and destroy you. To stand, to confront that, and to do it even when it's not easy. The Bible is filled with stories and examples of insignificant people used by God. Used by God to make a difference because they stood. And they made a difference. I read a quote this week from a guy. I never heard of Leonard Ravenhill before. You guys may have heard him, but a pastor shared this quote. He says, "If a million people smiled on me while I knew God was frowning on me, I wouldn't be happy. But if God smiled on me, even if a million people frowned on me, I wouldn't be unhappy." Said differently, I don't know if y'all watched the hit 2019 movie, Fighting With Your Family. Nobody saw that. It's about Paige, the famous WWE wrestler who came up as a famous female wrestler and from England, and nobody sees this. Well, she, in the midst of there, she says, "Just because millions of people aren't cheering you on while you do it, that doesn't mean what you're doing isn't important." I thought those were pretty profound words from Paige the wrestler, right? Just because a million people aren't cheering you on when you do something doesn't mean what you're doing isn't important. Do the right thing, even if it's hard, even if no one around you approves. Confront evil. Number two, accept God's grace. Accept God's grace. Luke 13, 34 says, Jesus said, "How often I have wanted to gather your children together as a hen protects her chicks beneath her wings, but you wouldn't let me." Accept God's help. You were created by God. You were created for God, and God desires the very best for you, but it also requires you to accept his grace, his help, his direction in your life. When you face an insurmountable challenge, God says, "I'll meet you there. I'm closest to you there. I want to do the most through you there." But it relies on your total and utter dependence on God. The Bible is filled with those people like David in the battle with Goliath, where he had no right to fight or to win that battle. But because he totally and utterly relied on God with a simple stone and a sling, he defeated Goliath. We see that throughout the history in the Bible and in our own lives. When God meets us and we allow him to fully empower us, even in our weakest, especially in our weakest, God's Holy Spirit can do the most. Accept God's grace. And finally, number three, we worship God regularly. 35 reads this way. It says, "And now look, your house is abandoned, and you will never see me again until you say, 'Blessings on the one who comes in the name of the Lord.'" The key to our relationship with God is our regular relationship with God. The abandoned house that Jesus mentions in this verse is the house, the temple, the religion that God had built up through the Jewish people, but they had so often turned to alliance with King Herod's of their time, alliances with Rome that said, "Hey, if we're safe and we're trusting this ruler, we'll be good." And they had given up on the mission God had given him. That closing of that passage, "Blessings on the one who comes in the name of the Lord," is from Psalm 118. And the Hebrew people had sung that years before this when they journeyed from wherever they were into Jerusalem as a preparation for worship. And Jesus says, "You're not worshiping God anymore. It's only in your regular worship, when you connect with God, that you have the power of God to do these things." They had gotten away from worshiping God, and they needed to return to worshiping God. In some ways, I hope our church, our service, you and me, are a little bit, in a spiritual sense, like St. Jude's, where we're a hospital for those whose souls and spirits and journeys need the supernatural interaction from Jesus. I remember back in September whenever I think they went, Lily and her family went on a Tuesday, and on Wednesday night I was gathered here for our Wednesday night dinner and talking with some folks. And the guy mentioned, he's like, "Man, I love St. Jude's and I know they're going to do good by her. And I love that place because I've been sending a check every month since 1990-something to St. Jude's. And I just remember thinking, it's that kind of work from people, being faithful, doing what God has invited them to do, that created a space like St. Jude's, that's equipped, that's done the research, that's got the medicine development, that's got the building and the space to receive and host, so that kids can be healed from cancer. And the church is to follow that kind of model. It takes that kind of consistency from you and from me. That if we're part of the team that God is creating, that we're doing more than just getting our own healing, that we become part of the healing process for other people. That our consistent worship of God is more about what we give to God and what our presence brings with other people than necessarily what we get. Once we've been healed, we become part of the healing team that's waiting and ready for those whenever their souls are touched by God and say, I'm ready to come to church, to be a place to receive, to offer the cure for spiritual longing hearts. And so in that way, I hope that we're becoming that kind of church that says, God, don't keep away those that are sick, those that are broken, but God, send them here. God, we're going to be a place that's ready to receive, that kind of place. And to be honest, if I think about it, if we're not that, it breaks my heart. If we ever say, hey, you're too broken to come here, you need to get right before you come here. But no, let's say, God, send us those that nobody else can help. Send us those who need you the most. Send us those that no one else wants that can help. Send us those who you are seeking to save and to heal. I pray that we'll be a place that we worship regularly and prepare to welcome those God is sending our